And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
Even with World War III right there, gonna get us. Yeah, they're gonna get us. We had Commander in Chief. You know, it's not Commander and Chief. It's Commander in Chief, whatever the heck that means. So, Commander in Chief is the forum that they had with Trump and Hillary. You know, nobody else, just those two. They're the only ones that matter, I guess. Yeah. Well, what'd they talk about? Hillary had talked about her. She knew what classified meant and her emails, and she didn't, and whatever. And now she quit it for a freaking half hour, and I don't care. And she's bad. And then Trump came in, and I thought he was amazingly measured when the host was trying to, and he just like he wouldn't take the bait. And he's just like, you're contradicting. And I thought Trump did fairly well. The thing is, though, is that, you know, I didn't really get a lot of policy other than I'm not going to tell you what I'm going to do because then they know what I'm going to do. So, you know, that was probably about the closest we could get. I'm wondering, you know, with the great ear of Mr. Scott Horton, scotthorton.org, anti-war radio, he had an opinion of what, Mr. Horton?
Well, I agree with you that, you know, Trump won in the sense that he needed to seem calm. And, you know, that's his biggest weakness is he's so bombastic and he's such a basket case and he flip-flops all around all the time. And she finally figured out that this is how to win the election is to say, look at how dangerous this guy is. Doesn't he seem unstable to you? And which is a really good line because, yes, he does seem unstable. So she's really made a lot of hay out of, can you imagine him with his finger on the nuclear button and what a danger that would be? Someone's going to insult him on Twitter and then he's going to start a war. And that's really working. So what does he have to do? He needs to go out there and be very cool, calm, and collected in order to, you know, portray that character and give that message out that, you know, actually I can be cool, calm, and collected, and especially on this issue. No, I'm not going to get upset about Putin. No, I'm not going to get upset about whatever it is. So that's what he was going for in terms of tone. I think, you know, that's probably right. Otherwise, I mean, the guy's a disaster. And when he says that he's going to knock out ISIS in a month, what he's saying is he's going to send in the army and or the Marine Corps, right? You can't bomb ISIS out of Mosul and Raqqa from the air without just carpet bombing the cities and killing untold, you know, hundreds of thousands of innocent people in a short amount of time. They're not going to do that. The military's not even going to do that. If he ordered them to the Air Force to carpet bomb Mosul, they're not going to do that. The only way to kick the Islamic State out of Mosul and out of Raqqa quickly is to drop in the airborne, is to drop in American ground troops. And right now, Hillary hilariously denied that there are any ground troops there or that there ever will be, when we know for a fact, it's not even hidden, that there are more than 6,000 soldiers on the ground in Iraq and Syria already right now. Special forces mostly training and leading the Peshmerga and the Iraqi army forces, but fighting too, pulling triggers as well, certainly in the Battle of Ramadi they did. And anyway, so she says, yeah, we're going to defeat the Islamic State, but only with proxy fighters. We're not going to ever put you know, American soldiers on the ground there ever again. I promise. And which, even though they're already there, she was lying, you know, pretending that they're not there when they're already there. So you can be sure that she doesn't mean that. And it's pretty easy to interpret Donald Trump and what it was that he was saying, you know, his whole thing. And he's starting to sound like he did a year ago, too, about what I'm going to do is I'm going to find a Patton. I'm going to find the meanest SOB general in the whole Pentagon who's, you know, willing to, you know, fist fight all the rest of them himself. The toughest guy we got, MacArthur or Patton or somebody like that. And we're going to send him in and he's going to destroy Mosul. All right. Now, does that sound like an Air Force bombing campaign to you? Some drones? That's means invasion. That's his secret plan, is he's going to put ground forces there, which, again, doesn't make him different than Hillary Clinton, other than where she'll tell an outright lie looking you right in the eye. He'll say, well, I'm not just not going to tell you.
Well, you know, the one thing that I got from the host, he was, you know, he's trying to get some dig on. I mean, kind of, of course, you know, we got to hear about emails with Hillary. That's the only issue up. And then she's got her pat answer of, you know, blah, blah. She wouldn't shut up and take questions from the audience, just kept rambling on. But it was when Trump got up, I thought that who is it? Lauer? What's his name?
Yeah, Matt Lauer.
I mean, he was, it's NBC, so they were definitely going after them some Trump. And he, I thought Trump deflected it awesomely. He just like, yeah, they brought that up. They go, yeah, well, you're bombat and you're the kind of gun. He goes, yeah, well, there were 16 candidates and I'm the one that won. So I guess, do you regret saying some of this stuff? Well, you know, personally, I kind of regret, you know, what I had to do to get here. But guess what? I'm here, and this is what it took to get here. It worked. I did it, so I don't regret that and kiss my butt. Now let's talk about, now that I'm here, let's talk about, you know, what I want to do. And he just, I thought it was a masterful switch that he just, he didn't respond or act the way that they wanted him to, that they expected him to, that they thought they could trigger him into. It was like he got on the first national, here we are with Hillary, and this was all part of his original plan, in my estimation. What it took to get there, now he's there, ha ha ha.
And it's all about the message, you know, like Scott Adams says, Donald Trump is a master persuader. And he's actually made, I think, a pretty major strategic error in the sense that he went so far in smashing his Republican competition and then he didn't turn it off. He used the same kind of, you know, mocking cruelty against the Gold Star dad as he did against Jeb Bush. So, you know, people love watching a powerful man like Donald Trump stomp basically a powerful man like Jeb Bush. But then when it's the dad of a guy who jumped out in front of a suicide bomber to save his buddies in his army unit and Trump goes after him the same way, then, you know, that makes him look pretty bad. That makes him look like the same thing with saying, well, the judge is Mexican, he can't rule on my case, he's a Mexican. It makes it look like he can't control himself. If he could, he would know better than, you know, to go on and on for a week or 2 weeks about this Gold Star dad who had insulted him at the Democratic convention kind of thing. So at least he's finally got it through his head that he needs to start persuading us that he's not just a basket case, that part is an act. And especially when it comes to issues of national security, is he going to be, you know, when we picture him in the Oval Office, do we picture him ranting and raving and not listening? Or do we picture him being a grown, sober adult? And he needs very badly for people to imagine the latter now. And it may be too late, actually. He was so bombastic for so long that it's, I think, you know, going to be pretty hard for him to climb down from. In fact, I interviewed a guy yesterday on the subject of nuclear weapon, and the guy was a left winger anyway, but on the subject of nukes, and to him, it was just open and shut that no matter how horrible Hillary is, and he would stipulate that everything you could say about her is true, at least she's an adult and she's rational, as opposed to screaming baby, basket case, you know, freak pants Trump. And that's an important narrative that it may be too late for Trump to get over at this point, honestly.
Oh, I don't think anybody else was paying attention till now.
This is Donna Hancock with Silver Alliance Realty in Phoenix, Arizona, and I specialize in helping you find the real estate that fits your needs. Whether you are looking to purchase a home or a piece of land, whether it's in town or a rural setting, I can help you find exactly what you are looking for. Most of us are aware of the turbulent times ahead and will need to settle in a place that will suit our particular desires, not only to protect our families, but to thrive in the coming downturn of the economy. Unfortunately, that time is not in the future, but it is upon us, and if you are going to get ahead of the game, now is the time to prepare. Qualifying options for new loans are narrowing, the dollar is being devalued every day, and living expenses are on the rise. So I have created a useful tool on my webpage at DonnaHancock.com that will allow you to search for properties at your leisure that are of interest to you. Simply click on the Search MLS tab at the top of my webpage to begin your search today. Start preparing for your future, and when you are ready to move forward with your home or land buying purchase, we can work together to get you and your family ready to flourish. Feel free to call or text me at 602-828-1819. That's 602-828-1819, and let's get started today.
If you enjoy LRN.FM, please contribute to your favorite shows via their websites and become an amplifier at amp.lrn.fm. That's amp.lrn.fm.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. Oh, we're going to get the dirty laundry out. Something I can use to make everybody watch me. Oh, we got bombs are going off. We're going to get some ratings and rankings and whatever and the kind of stuff. You know, and then we got the presidential race. One thing we left with Scott Horton, we're talking about the, you know, how Trump portrays himself, what they expected, and he's bombastic, and is he ever going to recover from that perception? And I don't think most people even pay attention. That's one of the points I was making with Dr. Frank. I'm going, if everybody that watches cable news all at one time and we nuke some of the mushroom clouds of everybody tuned in and go, ooh, we're up to maybe 10 million. And I'm going, out of 330, 50, whatever million people there are, to think that Fox News and MSNBC and CNN control, they're not even paying attention. Yeah, blah, 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 blah. Wait until they're on TV together. Well, they weren't together. They flipped a coin. Trump won. He goes, I'll go second. So Hillary does her half hour, kind of rush. She's just, you know, babbling. I didn't think it worked. Came out to, I mean, she didn't, like, you know, shoot herself in the mouth or anything. But, yeah, pretty much. I mean, it was not a great performance. I mean, I don't think it. She was portrayed as, you know, going to save the planet or anything. And then Trump came in and surprised people. And I think that was, you know, intentional. I think that it's built up to now. I think this is the Donald that you're going to see from now on. And I'm wondering, you don't think, Scott, that that's possible that he's going to turn this at all?
No, I agree with you. I think it's a great point that, you know, most Americans don't pay attention to politics at all until, as you say, it's just the last stretch in a presidential campaign, last couple of months of a presidential race like this. Now, I think this year is a little bit different because of Donald Trump. He's such a famous person in America that he's gotten a lot of attention. You know, the Republican primary debates got the best ratings they've ever got in history and that kind of thing. So this has been kind of a national election all along, with people paying more attention than usual.
International.
You're right that he could, if he wanted to, he could. And especially, you know, in American politics and TV news, the way it works is these people can flip flop and they can just put on a new act. And as long as they stick with it for a little while, the TV will go with it, too. So, you know, there's been this narrative all along that soon maybe we'll see the pivot where Donald Trump is going to start acting presidential. And so if he actually does, you know, fulfill his role in that script, that they've already come up with, then they'll go along with that. So, yeah, if he continues to act like he acted in that debate where he's calm and cool and collected and reasonable seeming, and he tries to stick with that, you know, for months in a row without, it, you know, attacking the waitress or any of the other, you know, the sound guy at his rally or whoever, you know, weak people he likes to bully and pick on. If he can avoid that for a little while, then, yeah, I think he could change the narrative quite a bit. And again, look, he's up against the weakest candidate, i.e. the worst person on the face of the earth in Hillary Clinton. I mean, for him to lose to Hillary Clinton would be just a biblical level failure and disgrace. I mean, on the level of Rand Paul refusing to promote libertarianism during his campaign.
Yeah, we're not seeing really any representation of what we would advocate for from the Johnson campaign. I'm not getting, it's like they always go and they say, well, libertarian, you have a lot of opportunities, they give a lot of press, and they say, well, libertarians say this about, you know, fill in the blank issue. And what do you say? Well, not that. I mean, it's like I need to get a bumper sticker that says, no, I'm not that libertarian. And I don't see any benefit. Is there any hope that he may get in the debates? Is that even a possibility? Because 15% in some poll, and well, we make sure we don't have that poll. So I'm like, what's the likelihood that we're going to get the libertarian candidate in the debate?
Well, like you said, he's 5 points short now. In order to get 15%, well, look, he just can't. I mean, in order to get 15%, he would have to turn into Ron Paul and have a real movement of people behind him who love him and support him and are pushing him forward. And, you know, the demand for a hero right now is so high. I mean, that's the only reason anybody likes Trump. It's not because they even really like him. It's just that they figure they believe in the one thing, his one bit of shtick they buy, which says, I'm so rich, no one can bribe me. I'm so rich, no one owns me. Hillary Clinton, she's bought and paid for by special interests. Me, I only care about you. And so even if they think he's wrong about everything, they think, well, hell, at least he owns himself. And, it, you know, he's not really compromised. He says what he wants to say, not what has been decided he must say, and that kind of thing. I mean, look at Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders sucks. I mean, if you pretend that you're a leftist for a minute, he still sucks, right? He's no, Dennis Kucinich doesn't have the most charisma, I guess, but at least he's principled, man. He's got a voting record that almost entirely matches up with what he has to say. And Sanders is nothing like that. Sanders didn't even have the courage to take Hillary on foreign policy whatsoever. And yet still he was churning out thousands and thousands and thousands of people to his rallies and created a huge movement and put up a real contest against Hillary just because, you know, the super majorities in the polls say America is on the wrong track. They need someone to come and tell them the truth and tell them this is what we need. This is what to do. We need peace and we need freedom and the Ron Paul shtick. And Johnson, I guess, has decided that if he runs as Bill Weld, that might get him the support of the Romneys of the world. And that might be enough to get him into the debate. And then in the debate, he can show that he's the only reasonable adult in the room because the other two are such nutcases, and maybe he'll get some kind of default. And I just think that that's a terrible policy. Running as a liberal Republican, as a moderate rhino, when, yes, we're centrists, us libertarians, but that's because we're against everything. The rhinos, the liberal Republicans, the so-called moderates, they're not moderate at all. They're the extremists. They're the ones who are for everything. And, so to run as that is, I think, a huge mistake. Like, maybe he'll get some of the Rockefeller Republican old establishment, you know, money and attention and pats on the head from them. But that's not going to win him any votes. You know, the best votes he's going to get at this point will just simply be default protest votes of people who hate Hillary and Trump so much, when he could be leading a Gary Johnson revolution right now, but he just won't. I don't know why.
Nah, he was.
He didn't have the vision to see it.
He was muzzled from the. It was a part of the plan. You're not allowed. This might. We need to kind of keep it in check. And the Bill Weld, see a Council on Foreign Relations of the. You know what we're going to say is not libertarian. Yeah, there's something I will find out later or something. Oh, let me tell you this. I had Mark J. Victor on a couple of days ago. We were talking about the Ninth Circuit decision on whether you can buy guns if you got a marijuana card kind of deal. And so as we're talking, he goes, yeah, but Ernie, you know, Gary Johnson is, you know, kind of paves the way and got a lot of attention, you know, for a real libertarian in 2020. You know, somebody like me. And I go, really? So Mark Victor's got that, you know, that vanity hole in his chest just can't get filled. I mean, he's gonna get some. So Mark Victor may, you know, could easily be convinced to run for president of the United States of America. You know,
but who's Mark Victor? I mean, Gary Johnson was a governor.
Yeah, he's
Governor Johnson.
Yeah, that doesn't matter. He wants to have lunch with. He and I go and meet with Nick Sarwark. Now, Nick has already, I'm sure he's got mapped out into the future. It's already the plan of who the 2020 guy is, somebody, something that's already been decided, you know. And so I think Mark should go through this just so we get to see, you know, the process and go. And
you know what I really think, dude? Here's what I think. This is what I've always thought for 15 years now or something. The Libertarian Party ought to be taking all of the effort that they're doing right now to run Gary Johnson for president. They should be running him for Congress. They should be having this national level campaign, because that's what it'd take. We're the, you know, well, they are the Libertarian Party. They're the nobodies. They need all this effort to take their biggest star, somebody like Johnson, and put him in the House.
You know, I got a call last night.
One guy in the House.
No, check this out.
L by his name.
I got a call last night from a one of the Ron Paul guys here, and he worked. His name's Sean Dow. He worked with Schweikert, getting him elected as a congressman here, and all that kind of stuff. And he had a friend that ran as a Republican against the incumbent. What's her name? Mouskowitz or something? The U.S. senator from Alaska. And in 12, I think it was 12 or 14. They had an election, and it was the Republican primary, and this guy beat her that he was helping, beat the incumbent. She gets all pissed off, so she runs as a write-in. She didn't have a sore loser law that they can't run for the same office later. So she runs as a write-in. They go into the general election. You've got a Libertarian, a Democrat, a Republican, and the incumbent U.S. Senator, her run is right in. It's kind of like Joe Lieberman thing, you know, when he lost and he came back in anyway. So she runs as a right in and was short, missed it by like, you know, 90 votes or something like that. Then the Secretary of State says, you know what? All these Mickey Mouse votes are close enough for Mouskowitz. I say that they met Mouskowitz and got all those 1,600 votes for Mickey Mouse. She wins. Who was the Who was the Secretary of State? Her sister. You can't make this crap up, man. So
that's
I'm just
awesome.
Going.
That's like when George Bush's cousin was at Fox News and called Florida for Bush in 2000.
Yeah, no, this is so I'm going, are you freaking kidding me? Yep. So now they're running again. This guy that beat her before is running as a Libertarian. He's on the ballot. They did their internal whatever and boom, he's the candidate. So he's like, should I go up there and do this? Well, I think he kind of made up his own mind. I'm going to have him on the show, this candidate. He's going up there to run the Libertarian that already had gotten more votes than the other one before, but as a Republican. So he's got his pilot's license. He's going to go borrow some Bush planes. But the whole state, there's only 400 and something thousand people. To be a U.S. senator, for like 50,000 votes, you win. And I go, what? So I'm, all right. So the party should focus on that one. All right, here we go.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Mr. Scott Horton, we get, you know, educated on, you know, all the stuff that's going on. What I need to know know, this, you know, I told him off air this story. I got to tell this one real quick. You know, this is a good one, Scott. I get a call from a friend that, you know, worked on the Ron Paul campaign. He does a lot of Republican stuff. He's a consultant. You know, you hire him to whatever. So he calls me yesterday and he says, I got to make a decision by 11 o'clock tonight whether I'm on a plane to Alaska or not. This is what happened. I think it was in 12. In 2012, as a gentleman that he knew, he helped as his campaign manager or whatever and helped him run in Alaska. Alaska only has 500,000 people or so. I didn't know it was that low a population. I should look up the population of Alaska, will you, Donna? And so you, to win, to be a U.S. senator, United States of America senator, you only need, I don't know, like, you know, 50,000 votes or something like that. Be easy, like, you know, Scott was saying. You know, libertarians should focus on a state. Now, our libertarian presidential candidate in 92, Andre Marou, was a legislator in Alaska. And part of, you know, decriminalization of marijuana a little bit in Alaska is the first state that kind of, like, didn't shoot you if you smoked a joint or something. So I'm going, okay, so Alaska's got some skills. Well, what they did is they go, you know, we need you to come up here. Well, and I think it was 12, he went up there. And in the Republican primary, this one guy, I don't remember his name, we're going to have him on next week. He wins against a Republican U.S. Senate incumbent. Well, it goes to the general election. You have the Libertarian. You have 737,000 people in 2015 in Alaska. That's it? God, man, the city of Phoenix, three times that. All right. So what happens is he goes up to the general, and you have the Libertarian, the Democrat, and the Republican that he beat the incumbent. She runs as a write-in, okay? She wins as a write-in because so they said. They go in, and she has short by, I don't know, a few hundred votes. She's not going to win. Then the Secretary of State, Republican Secretary of State, comes in and says, you know, all these write-ins for Mickey Mouse, and her name is Mouskowitz, you know, it's close enough. I'm counting them. She wins by, you know, 1,600 votes added to her pile. She wins by enough, and she's U.S. Senator now, thus saith the Secretary of State. And the Secretary of State was the U.S. Senator's sister. You can't make this stuff up. So now it's have the Libertarians have put this guy as their candidate. They did move, and this one, you know, withdrew and that, and kind of boom, and now they're on the ballot. So here we had this guy that beat her before, then she came as a ride into it. Anyway, that's the race now in 2016 for U.S. Senate in Alaska. Should he go up there and have part? I go, well, hell, I want to talk to him and tell this story. Are you freaking? Does that shock you at all, Scott? I mean, how bad does it have to get for you to get shocked?
Yeah, you know, I don't know, man. Compared to what's going on in Syria right now? No, I mean, look, American democracy is a freaking joke, dude. What can I say?
It's a joke. Okay, so now, is there any updates on, you know, Third World War, we're all going to die?
Oh, yeah, plenty of that, man.
All right, go through it real quick, man. Hit me.
All right. Well, you know, I think one thing, well, the most important thing in the world is always, Ernie, is America's relationship with Russia. And that's because we got 7,000 nukes pointed at them and they got 7,000 nukes pointed at us. And, you know, I don't know how old all of your audience members are, so I'll just refresh their memory that Soviet communism died 25 years ago.
No, it didn't. Damn Russians are coming.
Dead. And I urge anyone who is said, oh, yeah, no, John Birch is right. They're just biding their time and come back and get us and blah, blah, blah. Go and just put in Google images USSR and then Russia and just look at the difference. They let all of Eastern Europe and Central Asia go. The Soviet Empire is gone. It's just Russia now. And guess who's the Reds, everyone? You won't be too surprised. It's us. And now the domino theory is everyone will do what we say. As long as we go around spreading democracy in the world, it'll get easier and easier because it'll work so well and it'll take off with such fashion and fad and excitement behind it that it's just going to spread all over the place, right? Just like if the communists take Vietnam, then Laos and Cambodia and Thailand will immediately fall was the theory back then. Now we're the Reds. This is part of the excuse behind our intervention and our continued occupation of Afghanistan and Iraq, as well as expanding the EU, but especially the NATO military alliance in Eastern Europe. And if you go and add to your Google image search, NATO expansion, You will see how Bill Clinton started this, and it was only for domestic political reasons. He needed Polish votes in Illinois to be reelected in 1996. That was what it was about, to get it started. And then George W. Bush doubled down and worse, threatened, and that is the proper term, threatened to bring Ukraine and former Soviet Georgia into the North Atlantic Treaty Organization as well. And that was absolutely the bridge too far. And the Russians made it exceedingly clear that they considered that a threat and that they would push back. I mean, Putin said it in plain language back years ago. And America has just been screwing around and screwing around. We've done two coup d'etats in Ukraine, which is Russia's Canada. We've done two coup d'etats in 10 years against the same democratically elected Russia-leaning president there, and started a war in 2014 that, you know, thankfully lasted about only a year and a half or two before we got a pretty good ceasefire out of it, because the Germans and the French finally intervened and insisted on a ceasefire over there, and Obama backed down and basically let them. But this is the setup for now in our presidential campaign. We have, and I don't know, like you said, people are only just starting to pay attention and tune in now. I don't know to what degree people are going to buy this, Ernie, or not, or what. But there is a huge campaign now of basic, it's like McCarthyism, only dumber. Where, you know, like I said, communism is gone, and yet they are really trying their very best. The Democrats and the media are doing, it's just incredible, the job they're doing, trying to say that Donald Trump's candidacy is a Kremlin plot, that he is a useful dupe being used and manipulated by the crafty KGB spy Vladimir Putin. And, you know, Mike Morrell, who was the sitting the acting director of the CIA for a time, not confirmed as the full director, but he had been promoted for a time and whatever. He wrote a thing saying that Trump is an unwitting agent, which Phil Giraldi, a real former CIA officer, not just an analyst, mocked him for that. And so there's no such thing as that. You recruit somebody to be a CIA asset. You know, they might not know who they're working for, but they know they're working for somebody. There's no such thing as just an unwitting agent. But anyway, they're just trying to smear it as though smear Trump and really smear Putin and smear Russia. By trying to say that every time Putin says, hey, let's get along with Russia, that's because he's a Manchurian candidate and he's being controlled by the Kremlin. Now, on one hand, I think that even Americans have got to be too smart for this. I mean, yes, communism is gone, but still, it's basically red baiting the way that they, oh, Putin, Russia, Kremlin, oh, Moscow. It's the bad old days that they're referring to. And yet, who's their target? Their target is a billionaire Republican businessman from New York. How in the hell could he? And this is where, you know, okay, it's not communism anymore. But, you know, I just don't think it really makes sense, right? I don't think the Democrats or the media have done a good enough job of flipping Russia in the American imagination into being a terrible fascist right-wing threat that somehow fits with Trump and his image. You know what I mean? They say Kremlin and you think the Reds. Well, Hillary Clinton's the one who wrote, it takes a village to raise your child. Hillary Clinton's the one who wants to nationalize healthcare. Hillary Clinton is the one who's been running to the right, because we all know what a pinko commie she is, for the last 25 years. And to me, it should, my point is, it really should be falling flat. But I'm afraid that they're getting away with this narrative that Trump is really an agent of a foreign power and the Russians, which is total nonsense and which is very dangerous for the Clinton administration when she comes into power.
I'm sorry, you know, when she comes into power, did you say that?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, if I heard the music for just a sec, so I was trying to hurry. But yeah, if she wins, she's called Putin Hitler. She's compared him to Hitler, I think, twice for the annexation of Crimea, which was nothing like what Hitler did with Czechoslovakia, but doesn't matter. So when she comes, assuming she wins the presidency, how's she going to reset that? And when it's her husband who was behind NATO expansion in the first place, how's she ever going to concede that maybe some of that was a bad idea? She can only triple down, where Trump isn't married to those policies. Trump can just say, I don't care. Why don't you come to the White House for dinner?
That was one thing that I don't really understand where the perspective is coming from Lauer and NBC and all these guys. They think that they get them on the national stage and they'll go, so you're saying you would really, you know, like meet with Putin instead of punch him in the face? Like you said, you're going to bomb the shit out of him and you're going to this and you're going to that. And you're just going to not spit in his face when you see him, and you're going to invite him to the White. I mean,
Iraq. I mean, Matt Lauer's question for Hillary was in 2016, when she famously took years and a loss to Barack Obama before she finally admitted that her Iraq war vote was wrong. And yet Matt Lauer said, in this room full of veterans, I mean, lady, how can you justify saying now that your vote on Iraq was a mistake? That was the way he framed it, was how dare you even now, years later, change your mind? And she was like a little surprised, but you could see the gears turning in her head. And she said, no, I can't flip-flop back now. And so she said, no, it was a mistake, Matt. I really shouldn't have done that. But wowee, what was going through his mind, you know, to frame it in that way? Like, your vote for the Iraq war, a mistake? What kind of treason is that for you to say, lady?
Yeah, I'm wondering what level these guys... Well, it was like with Brian Williams. When Brian Williams was up there, when he got outed for being just a lying sack of snot of him embellishing his whatever the hell. But a couple weeks go by, and then boom, there he is right again. And I'm going, what level are these guys? I'm wondering, you know, when you get the, you know, the Koppels and the Dan Rathers and the... whoever the hell is, you know, Williams, and who's the guy that was NBC back in the day?
I don't know, but I know the answer to your question. The answer is they're just anchors. They're not journalists. They're anchors.
Well,
if you follow them on Twitter, you know that all they do at night is watch TV. They don't sit around reading.
Decision table. I mean, are they just, you know, send a memo to Brian, or are they sitting in the office and they're part of the agenda of how can I help their, you know, a Anderson Cooper CIA agent?
They get a memo in the email. It's just like, remember the that movie Outfoxed, where where the whistleblower provided all the memos from Roger Ailes saying, here's our agenda today? And I think that it's a great portrayal of how it works, because it's not like he's on the phone with Bill O'Reilly and Sean Hannity and Greta Van whatever the hell all day long. It's just that, hey, listen, here's what we think. Here's what we're saying. Here's what me and the Republicans talked about early this morning. And so here's what you're going to talk about today. And here's
all right, here we're coming
our
back.
Basic frame of the issue.
At LRN.FM.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Door. I just who's knocking? Who's banging? Who's doing, hey, it's election time, and I'm like, no, I'm not answering because I, you know, but I will go ahead and check the webcam on my phone while I'm on the beach and see who's at my door. Well, that's kind of what we're doing with Scott Horton. We're just going to see, you know, who's a banging on my door. You know, the national, you know, pay attention. It's the most important election of your lifetime. Blah 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 blah. Is it? Scott, I mean, is the world is just waiting to see what happens to this election cycle when they're finally starting to get all the news and the blah, 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 blah. But now they have a commander-in-chief forum. They're sitting there. Here's Hillary does her half hour. Trump gets his half hour. The world watches all of the bombastic Trump, and they're going to see. And now we're going to see him for what he is. And everybody, and he came off, I don't know, is presidential the word, or, you know, influential or calm, or, and her, she was just on the defensive. They were, I don't know what was happening with Lauer. I'm looking at NBC and the role of the press in this. They kept trying to, you know, fan the flames of Trump. They, you know, prove that he, and he wouldn't play. And I'm wondering, was this planned from the beginning, you think, or he got influenced, or, but he did address it. He says, hey, I was, you know, getting the nomination. Now I got it. Now we can go play, you know, bring Hillary on. And I'm wondering how much of that was conscious from the beginning, or how much was influenced. How savvy do you think Trump is?
Yeah, look, I think Trump went out there knowing that I can't lose my cool at all. I got to just be very, you know, patient and cool and collected and whatever, because especially on this topic, like we talked about before, this is Hillary's, you know, best strength against him is she doesn't get too excited, and he does. And when it comes to foreign policies and wars, on the very surface of it, we don't want excitability. We don't want ignorance. And so he has to go out there and basically show that no, he's an adult. He's not a raving kook. He was just pretending to be one so he could beat Mike Huckabee or whatever the hell. So yeah, I think he got away with that. As far as it goes for the night, as far as Matt Lauer goes, you know, honestly, man, I think it's easy to read, you know, more into it. I mean, basically, what was going on there was he had to be a little bit hard on both of them for his own credibility. And yet in his universe, what counts as being hard on them is asking her about her stupid emails and asking Trump about, I don't know, whatever the hell he asked Trump about. Nothing important. So that's just because of who Lauer is. Again, he's an anchor. He's not an actual journalist.
See,
he's not a reader. He watches. He's like Donald Trump. He knows everything he knows from watching TV. And so he doesn't know about the Yemen war and that there's a problem here. And let's talk about what's going on in Yemen and why, or anything like that. He's not even interested.
You know, that was one thing that I wanted to mention is that Gary Johnson had some kind of a row about he didn't know what Aleppo was. They're going, you know, right. Aleppo.
They ambushed him, too. I mean, they changed the subject on him in the middle of an interview and just said, what about Aleppo? And he was like, huh?
He thought it was an acronym of something, or what do you mean in, you know, kind of, I mean, I would imagine he probably, it's Syria. It's a city in Syria. They keep bombing Al-Chiquita, who owns Fallujah.
Well, and I have to say, it really is his fault, because he should have taken an interest in learning as much as he can about the Syria war. And this is a huge thing going on right now. And, you know, I know that he knows about CIA intervention there and that this is America's war. So imagine you're running for president. You know that the worst humanitarian crisis on the planet right now, that America's government is up to its eyeballs in this thing. And yeah, you don't have the curiosity to, you know, read Patrick Coburn and figure out what the hell is going on. So,
well, I mean, I didn't watch any of it other than them making fun of, he didn't immediately know what they were talking about, but I'm going, how much does he really, I don't know how he recovered from it, or if anybody cares, or it just, you know, I'm just, you know.
Well, the media piled on, but see, here's the thing. Look at what an opportunity he blew, actually, right? Because yeah. What he could have said was, yeah, no, Aleppo's, what's going on there is absolutely horrible.
Which wouldn't have
got
covered.
You know, the regime, the Syrian regime is killing civilians, it's true, and yet this is a war that America started, that America and our allies are actually backing the terrorists, and it's Hillary Clinton. And, you know, Hillary mocked Gary Johnson. Oh, he doesn't know where Aleppo is? Why doesn't he look at a map? Are you kidding me? And he's the one who's running against Trump, really, to help her right now. And yet, it sure seems like, anyway, and yet she wants to insult him. And yet, what was the real answer? The real answer is Aleppo would be just fine right now if it wasn't for Hillary Rodham Clinton, who as Secretary of State entered into a criminal conspiracy with the Turks, the Saudis, the Qataris, and the Israelis to back Osama bin Laden's men in Syria. Okay? Treason. Our government, our CIA, under Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, have sided with Ahrar al-Sham, which was founded by core members of al-Qaeda, to back Jabhat al-Nusra, which is founded by core members of al-Qaeda, which still is sworn loyal to Ayman al-Zawahiri, the butcher of New York City. So, yeah, you want to talk about Aleppo? Let's talk about how Hillary Clinton, in the middle of the war on terrorism, decided to take the terrorist side. And explain that to me, Morning Joe crew. How about you, Mika? You're Zbigniew Brzezinski's daughter. Tell me, whose side should we be on? The Shiite Crescent or Osama bin Laden? And yeah. Instead he went, I don't know, what the hell is Aleppo? Because he can't be bothered to look at antiwar.com, to look at Patrick Coburn's articles, to pay attention to his emails. It's sad. It's Rand Paul level, biblical level failure and tragedy here. We're talking about the greatest opportunity a libertarian candidate of any description has ever had. Can you imagine if when Harry Brown was running, it wasn't against Gore and Bush, who people were basically willing to settle for, but it was against Hillary and Trump? Can you imagine the hell that Harry Brown would be raising right now? Or if Ron Paul hadn't been so recently disgraced by his son, and Ron had decided to run as the LP candidate right now, can you imagine the hell that Ron would be raising? It would be the world turned upside down if Ron Paul was running against Hillary and Trump right now. And instead we've got, I'm for some gun control, and I'm for fighting ISIS, but not Assad, and I'm for, legalizing some drugs, but not others, and So we got Bill Weld. I'm sorry.
I'm with you, brother. There's nothing being learned, really. And I'm sad, because there's... there was a big opportunity, and it's just been fittered away. But fortunately, I think the electorate is becoming more and more disillusioned with the entire process. And I think after this election, because of what's happened, and it's obvious that there's a lot of election shenanigans going on, that limits their choices, limits their opportunity, limits the accuracy. I can go on and on and on about, the election BS, but that's becoming part of the story. In fact, Trump's campaign has, made a big deal out of, we got volunteers going to be poll watching and doing it, which, and unless they're little bits and bytes and like in Tron inside the software, it doesn't mean anything. I mean, they're going to do whatever they're going to do. Or what way you think the election fraud's going to lean? Is it a Trump or a Hillary win?
Well, as far as fraud goes, yeah. There's different kinds. I mean, if they can rig the computer voting machines in some places, I don't think that really works unless it's a very tight kind of race anyway. You can't flip too many percents or you get caught kind of thing.
No, they always BS you with its 50-49 thing.
But wait. Let me finish my answer. That would all be pro-Hillary stuff, but the Republicans are masters at getting black and brown people kicked off the voting rolls in the first place, which is the much worse form of fraud. And I urge people to read the latest Greg Palast about that.
Yeah, there's it gets countered with Obama getting, registered more illegal, making them eligible of 10 million.
Mythology. That's mostly mythology, especially compared to getting people kicked off the rolls because their last name is Johnson or Jackson or Martinez.
I'm you're still voting. Are you still voting, Scott?
Me?
Nah. Well, Scott Hort. Man, you're keeping us updated on, the presidential race is, I don't know what it's representative of. It's representative of just how jacked up this entire system is and what choices you don't have. ScottHorton.org.
Understanding your credit score.
There you go, man. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, let me say one more thing for the archive.
Sure.
All the news is in. After 1 year, the Iran nuclear deal is working great. And the Iranian government is, despite all the hype, and there's a new story a day about, boohoo, Iran this and Iran that and the deal this, and they got some money and ouch, quit it, and all of this crap. And yet, did they scale back their nuclear program by massive amounts? Yes.
Why didn't you know
they
had one?
Did they export their stockpile of nuclear material, and are they now holding only the very smallest bit of enriched material for use in their electricity program? Absolutely. Did they expand inspections to even non-nuclear sites like the centrifuge factories and the mines and all these things? Yes, absolutely. Every part of what Iran was supposed to do in order to get their sanctions relief, they have lived up to by miles. And so, you know, all the endless chorus of accusations about Iran, their nuclear program, and the nuclear deal amount to a bunch of crap. And all the proof you need is at news.antiwar.com.
Antiwar.com. All right. This is, when is the first debate? It's like September 28th or something. But the... we've always had, since 08, we've had debate parties here. And it's just been, you know, woohoo, we're going to have us a party. So I guess we got to put that up, Donna. You know, we're going to have a big debate party if we just throw popcorn at the screen. But I'm very interested. I think it's going to be, you know, one of the highest, certainly cable television events is the first face-to-face with Hillary and Trump. And I have no idea how that's going to play out. Do you?
Well, I can imagine, but I don't know. I mean, I hope that he just makes fun of her, like, you know, in a calm, cool, collected, deadpan kind of manner. But just, I mean, she has so many weaknesses. And, you know, I think if he was smart, what he would do is he would never even mind. I mean, maybe her Iraq war vote. But other than that, if I was him, I wouldn't even bother going back as far as her time in the Senate. Or definitely, I mean, maybe Hillary care, but other than that, I wouldn't even mention the 1990s, really. Or, you know, certainly not Whitewater and all that old crap. Because just her time as Secretary of State, when in the first 4 years of Barack Obama's administration, with all the just blatant pay-to-play corruption at the foundation, combined with the absolutely horrible policies in Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, and Syria. I mean, he ought to be able to just completely destroy her. You know, it's just like you and I talked about so many times on this show, with especially the wars in Libya and Syria. How could you have taken the side of the Mujahideen? And there's no denying that that's what happened. There's just no denying that that's what happened. And in fact, one of his advisors is Mike Flynn, who at the DIA oversaw the production of that report that said that we're in danger of creating an Islamic State here back in 2012. And Mike Flynn is the guy that verified that that document was important and that he saw it back then and everything in that interview on Al Jazeera. So it's one of those things where, like with the foundation, where Bernie Sanders never used the foundation against her in the primary, right? So now... it's blowing up. They could have wore this story out back a few months ago, but now it's blowing up as a huge news story because it's basically, you know, a hand grenade in Trump's hand whose pin has been pulled, and all he has to do is chuck it. And same thing with the Libya and Syria. Bernie Sanders never confronted her on that. No one ever confronts her on that. No one ever says, come on, you took the side of the Mujahideen. What are you doing? And yet it's 100% true and undeniable. And so that is like an MX missile in his hand. He could just absolutely destroy her for attacking her legacy as Secretary of State if he's bright enough to do it. And if he's bright enough to work with his staff and coming up with that as the best angle of attack. But now we get back to the fact of what a dummy he is and what a basket case he is. You know, what a TV watcher instead of a reader he is. And so... can he do it? I don't know, man. I only give him like a 25% chance, even though he's up against the worst lady in the world, the worst person in the world. You know, he doesn't really know where to stick the knife in. You know what I mean?
Well, I don't think any of it matters. I think whatever's going to happen is already predetermined, and they're just trying to go through the process.
If that was true, then Jeb Bush would be the nominee right now, not Donald Trump.
Jeb! Well, Hillary, Jeb, what's the difference? I mean, you know, it's just... I don't see it as... I don't think they could overwhelm the actual polling and the people in the streets and so on. And we have a story up on Freedom's Phoenix today that's about all the people having game webcams or, you know, hunting cameras on trees watching all the people taking the Trump signs. And I'm going, wow, it's an epidemic. It was like it was a strategy, a tactic that they got these people going out. They just take Trump signs. And I got my vote for nobody sign. I'm ready to put up probably here pretty directly. I'm waiting until the Secretary of State gets done with the primary postings of whatever here. When that comes out, boom, the sign goes up. So my neighbors, it's not going to surprise them, but I'm just like, I'm voting for nobody, man. Nobody's going to end the wars. Nobody's going to end taxes. Nobody's going to, you know, fix health care. So I'm voting for nobody. So, I mean, that's the sign. And I'm just, and as to my few neighbors and people that come by and the mailman or something, but I kind of see that's the flavor that this whole election is taking. And anybody that does have an opinion, they're actually not campaigning for something. They're going to the point that they're just taking everybody's Trump signs. And I'm going, wow, this is, I've seen it, you know, happening here. They're up and then they're gone. And I'm going, it's like a campaign that I feel like it's brown shirts of, you know, 30s Germany or something. It's just, and I don't even know whose side to be on. What, just none of them. And Johnson campaign hasn't given me anything. So I'm just, I'm not really sure how to take this whole thing other than sit on the sidelines and make fun of it, because I don't have any faith in the system at all for a lot of good reasons.
Yeah. No, the whole thing.
All right. I got to get to Jacob. Hey, man, it's great talking to you. Look forward to next week, buddy.
Okay, see you then.
Peace.